Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
John McAfee is coming up, and if you don't know that name, you're going to know it, and your mind shall be blown when you hear this guy's story. I felt like I was on peyote when I was interviewing him. So, that's coming. First, Geico. Mm-hmm. We're apart these days. People are sharing more. Geico wants to say thanks. Thanks for sharing the dance moves and the DIY haircut fails. And now it's their turn to share. Geico has a little give back proposition for you. 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Geico's committed for the long haul. So the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Just visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility.
Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all woke, no joke culture.
I love these as seen on TV products. I knew they were going to phase out the penny, but I didn't realize they'd already taken a ton out of circulation and infused all that copper into socks, underwear, t-shirts, and work gloves. The ads always have some aged NFL player saying, I can use my hands again, thanks to copper fit gloves. Or my knees don't ache, thanks to my copper infused leggings. Or my wife had 5 orgasms last night, thanks to my copper fit condom.
Available now in all formats. Pick up a copy now at adamcarolla.com.
John McAfee has joined us. He's, I'm trying to think of how to describe John McAfee. Computer programmer, businessman, politician to some degree, or budding politician, raconteur. I don't know. Thanks for joining the show, John.
Well, thanks very much for having me on, Adam.
How did we get where we are today? Let's see. Let's just give a brief bio of your life, and then we'll get on to sort of more current subjects. Born on a military base in England?
Correct. Yes.
So an American dad and English mom. Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Came to the United States at what age?
2.
At age 2. Always obviously into computers long before anyone else was, or most were into computers.
Well, yeah, I bit my teeth working at General Electric in 1968 and worked on process automation, which is still the most sophisticated and complex of all computer applications. General Electric had the only process automation computers at that time. I worked for a year and a half automating Australia Iron and Steel's rolling mill in Port Kembla, New South Wales. That's where I learned everything, hardware, software, how it interfaces, timing. We were programming, obviously, in assembly language. Process automation does not adapt itself to higher level languages because of timing issues. So that's where I cut my teeth. I've been in computing ever since.
Is there anything that has really surprised you about computers as somebody who was in the infancy of computers? Is there something that you didn't foresee that happened or could happen?
I didn't foresee anything. I'll be frank with you. I mean, listen, when I started, first of all, the process automation computers were small at the time. They were still the size of a small bedroom. Later on, I went from General Electric to NASA, where we worked with the first IBM 360 mainframe. That was the size of, you know, an entire house, and had the processing power of maybe 1/100th of the smartphone that you have in your pocket or on your desk or somewhere nearby.
Right. So let's just stop there for 1 second. The stuff you worked with at NASA took up the size of a house and had 1/100th of the processing ability that most people's smartphone have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only that, I mean, its ease of use was non-existent. We didn't have monitors back then, people. We had buttons and switches on the front of the mainframe panel. And then later on, card readers, which you could punch your program. When I first did General Electric, you had to hard code by switching the actual machine instructions on the front of the panel and pushing enter to set that into the hardware. Then came punch cards. Monitors didn't come around until the 1970s. Late 1970s, computer monitor and keyboards. Those were like miraculous things back at that point in time.
So you go on to develop your own software company and sell it and become obviously very successful and enigmatic as well. I'm reading here, fled to Guatemala, but got arrested for illegally entering the country. And, it's just a note on the bottom of my page here, but and so let's talk about that life that you've chosen to lead. Well, how would you describe it?
Well, yeah, I'm just a typical entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 11 and started mowing my neighbor's yards in the summertime and shoveling their walks in the wintertime. I mean, nobody likes mowing a lawn, to get real, but an 11-year-old boy coming by with a lawnmower saying, I'll mow your lawn for $2. You know, I made a fortune. so later on, I had paper routes. I sold magazines for myself through college that way. I've always been an entrepreneur. I don't like working for companies, even though I've worked for many. In computers, there was simply no other way to maintain, at least in the beginning, to maintain your relevancy. All the computers were owned by massive companies, insurance companies, IBM, UNIVAC, General Electric, and so on. So if you wanted to really get hands-on experience, you had to work for a large company. And I developed it. I was very good at it. I was a math major. I don't know why math comes easy to me, but it always has. And software is simply mathematics. That's all it is. Boolean algebra, pure and simple. With a little bit of normal mathematics thrown in, like add, subtract, multiply, and divide. So it just came very easy to me. And I, you know, always excelled. I could get any job I wanted. I'd work for a year, usually save up my money, quit, and then travel for a year or two. Wherever I ran out of money, if I'd get another job. I mean, I ran out in 1975, I think 75, Munich, Germany. I was traveling, really enjoying myself, ran out of money. I got a job with Siemens, Germany's largest electrical manufacturer. I ran out of money a couple of years later in London. Got a job with Rank Xerox, which is a British subsidiary of Xerox that at that moment in time made computers. And so that's just the life I've lived. Why? I don't know. I like adventure. I like seeing the world. I don't like authority. And, you know, people say, you know, I have a... or what is the word they use, a disrespect of authority. It's not true at all. I'm simply indifferent to it.
Well, you know, let's talk about that, because I'm trying to sort of – it's obviously these are interesting times we're living in as it pertains to authority. And my feeling with authority, anyone who knows me knows of – talked about running red arrows to turn left. I've been doing this for 25 years. Now, I'm not doing what you're doing, but what I'm saying is that's the government or the city or the state telling me to do something that's unreasonable, and I can safely turn left if the signal's green and the arrow's red. So I just choose to do it. And I've never gotten a ticket, but I wouldn't care if I did, because I think that it's unreasonable to tell me to sit there at a light that's green and not turn left when it's safe to turn left. And the signal before it you could have turned left because it didn't have an arrow. So now this sounds weird, but in a way, we're kindred spirits in that this is a law and it's an authority, but it doesn't make sense to me, so I'm not going to do it.
Well, I'm the same. And only I extend it to maybe a little broader areas in my life. I've been arrested 21 times, been in jail 21 times in 11 different countries, none of them for violent offenses. Guatemala was arrested. I just don't believe in borders, for example, national borders. I mean, it's an invisible line, and on one side there's one person, on the other, I just walk across them. Janice and I just got out of jail in the Dominican Republic 10 months ago. By the way, if you're looking for jail experience, people, I would not recommend the Dominican Republic. It's the absolute worst jail system on this planet. I mean, there's no running water, no bathrooms. It's pretty ugly.
Janice is your wife, and you're in there for
Janice
how long?
Janice is my wife.
How
yes.
long were you guys in there for?
Oh, just 4 days. Trivial. And I'm wanted, by the way, by the United States authorities now because I've refused to pay taxes for 11 years. It's unconstitutional and illegal. And people tell me, well, good God, if you don't pay taxes, we're going to, how do we pay for things? But please, people, prior to 1913, we had no taxes whatsoever. And we were the industrial giant of the world, people. Are we now? No, we have virtually no industry. Our steel mills, our steel industry is gone. Our automobile industry can barely keep up with the Chinese, the Japanese, the Germans. No, we're no longer an industrial power. We're a military power. That's not the same thing. It's not at all. So anyway, I've refused to pay for 11 years, and I never will. People say, why don't you just pay it and come home? I go, no, I refuse. Will not do it. Will not.
Where are you now? Where are you now?
I can't tell you because we're in hiding. So the IRS convened a grand jury on the 22nd of January of last year to charge Janice and myself with tax fraud. Now, it's impossible for me to have committed tax fraud because I haven't even filed returns. Tax fraud is lying, deceiving. No, I just every year said I'm not filing. You know where I live. They left me alone for 10 of those years, 9 of those years, up until 2 years ago when I started speaking on international stages about, listen, you don't want to pay taxes, here's how you do it. Use privacy coins and distributed exchanges, and no one will ever know anything about your finances. Well, that didn't sit well with them. And so in any case, I found out about the grand jury, and I decided I'm not playing that game. I found out about it in advance, even though they're supposed to be extremely top secret. And so Janice, myself, my entire staff, and our four large dogs went to Miami and hopped on our yacht and sailed to the Bahamas, where they had no taxes, and therefore it's not a crime not to pay them, and therefore I could not be legally extradited, neither one of us could.
How did you find out this information, this grand jury information?
I'm John McAfee. I mean, I've started the world's largest computer security firm. I mean, if you're a safe manufacturer and you cannot crack every safe in the world, then I want to know which ones you can't, and then I'll go and buy that safe. Do you understand? No. I mean, if I can stop people from breaking into systems, I can sure as hell break into anything I want. I'd hate to admit to the fact that, but no, I don't do anything in order to hurt, harm, or, make money. No, I simply keep my ear to the ground. When my name pops up anywhere in the digital sphere, I want to know about it. In any case, so we found out, went to the Bahamas. Now, the U.S. desperately wants me now because we're in the Bahamas. I was thumbing my nose up at the government and posting on Twitter how taxes are illegal. I'm still doing keynotes and talks about how not to pay taxes, people. So the I don't know which agency, but I found out about this too. They came after us in late March in the Bahamas. I found out we left about 6 hours before they arrived, went to Cuba. We were there for 2 months, and the Cuban government came and picked up Janice and I at the yacht club where we were docked. It took us to a military base, and a general came in, and Janice is here now. It's a sort of, you know, the craziness of the military. The general came in and said, I'm very sorry, but the United States has unofficially demanded that we return you to America. You know, my heart sank, because if I go back to America, I will never see the light of day. I'll be like Julian Assange, locked away in the basement of some, you know, prison for the rest of my days. But the general said, however, we're disinclined to do that. But you understand you're now a very serious problem for us. You have 72 hours to leave Cuba and never return. So we left, got a boat, our dogs, our staff went to 4.5 days at sea to the Dominican Republic. We were arrested on the boat by internal security forces from the. Now, this is how long an arm America has, people, just so you understand the government that America has turned into. In any case, so we're arrested. What's the charge? Well, you have to go back to America. So that was everybody just got to go, but just go back to America. But fortunately, this is not my first rodeo. I got two very slick lawyers in the Dominican Republic, and 4 days later, they won our freedom without sending us back, and we went to London. And from there, we've just gone underground. It's annoying to have to keep running from the American government because they're so good at chasing people.
Well,
but now they don't know where we are.
Do you believe that? I mean, obviously, you believe that they started going after you, not for not paying your taxes, but for putting the message out that others didn't have to pay their taxes. That's what scares them.
Of course. Listen, for 9 years, they left me alone, please. I paid over $50 million in taxes, U.S. government taxes, federal taxes, not to mention state and local. Over 50. I have not, people, received $50 million in services. I will say that.
Well, this is the argument I've made with people all the time, where they go, well, when are you going to pay your fair share? You got to pay your fair share. Like, these rich guys don't pay their fair share. I'm like, I paid millions of dollars in taxes. I didn't get anything for those dollars.
That's right. What would my fair share be if $50 million is not enough, people? Can you tell me?
Your fair share is we take what the average American pays in taxes, and then you pay that amount. That's your fair share. Unless there's something you're getting, like your own fire department, or you get to speed, you get out of parking tickets.
Yeah, right. Then it should pay more for that. No doubt. However, I would say jack shit, I'll be honest with you, other than headaches.
Yeah, I know. That's my point. So it always drives me nuts when people use the phrase fair share. That's not the right way. And also, it's an interesting kind of smear campaign. My mom is kind of an old hippie, and she's, you know, getting near the end of her life. And we had a conversation like 2 years ago, and she looked at me and she said, but Adam, rich people don't pay taxes. And I said, what do you mean they don't pay taxes? They pay most of the taxes. She had in her head that guys like you who've put in $50 million into the system, and you don't get to walk to the park and tell everyone to clear out, stop the soccer game, I want to have a picnic.
No, nothing.
Right.
Nothing. In fact, because I am or was in that bracket. I mean, I got audited constantly.
Right.
And maybe another $1 million somewhere you haven't told us about. No. Rather than getting preferential treatment, I got treated like a derelict on the street. I mean, this is the truth of it.
Where do you think this country is heading in this current climate? Because it feels to me like the authoritarians that you're sort of talking about are really supercharged, and that under the umbrella, and for me, I won't put words in your mouth, but to me, they use the umbrella of safety everything is for your own safety, for the safety of the whatever, for the safety. And then they regulate and tax based on safety. They don't say because I want more power. They just go because of safety. And then they just move forward. I mean, if you take – yeah, go ahead.
Hey, let's separate some of the words here for just a second. Country. Our country is not our government, people. Our country is this vast, beautiful expanse of magic. You know, the Grand Canyon, the Rocky Mountains, two oceans, both of which are radically different and yet beautiful in their own ways. You've got deserts, the vast fields of Kansas. Good Lord, it's a beautiful country. And on that land are the people. The people plus the country is America. The government is a servant, or that was what it was designed to be, of the people, for heaven's sake. We, as the people, because too much trouble to build roads, state to say, let's get the government to do that. We need a military to keep foreign governments from, you know, coming and building their own whatever. No, it's supposed to be a servant. Now, I was thinking about this just 2 days ago. I don't know at what point the government changed from being a servant to a savior. Do you understand the difference?
Mm-hmm.
A servant is a tool of the people. Go build the roads. We're paying you a good salary. If you don't do it, we're going to vote your ass out and get someone who can. Do you understand? And prior to 1913, and you figure out how to fund it, because we ain't. And that's what we made sure we put in office people smart enough to fund themselves. And they did. You know, as long as they didn't take it from us, we didn't care. Tax the Chinese, tax the people, you know, who cares? But no, don't take it from us. And the Constitution that strictly forbids taking it from us. But in any case, that servant at some point in time decided that, well, listen, I mean, not only are we a servant, but really we're big. I mean, we're nationwide and we're smart because they put us in office. We must be smart. I'm smarter than the people, and therefore we must save them from what? Well, from themselves, mostly. Right. I mean, this latest thing with coronavirus, I mean, listen, it used to be quarantine was for people who were sick. Put them in quarantine. Okay, let's hope we don't get sick. Now, we put everybody in. I don't know, you might get sick. Therefore, we're putting you in quarantine for your own safety. Go in your house, lock your door. Listen, it used to be that they'd go, their job should be, hey, there's a deadly virus out here. Be careful, people. Do right. What you wish. Lock yourselves in if you wish or you don't. It's your business, but we're just informing you. No, it's now... we're going to save you from some deadly, please God, it's an airborne virus. I don't know if anybody's noticed that yet. Virus, not an airborne bacteria. A virus is a million times smaller than a bacteria. If you sneeze, the virus can be blown thousands of miles on the wind. And look this up, people. I did. In every square meter of air that we breathe, there are 800 million viruses of almost every species. We live in a soup of airborne viruses. There's not like polio, which is a virus, but can only be transmitted through contaminated water, for example. Or viruses that cause some pathogenic diarrhea. And by the way, 2.5 million people a year die from pathogenic bacterial viruses. 2.5 million. We never paid much attention.
John, the part of this whole thing that is sad to me is not what the government is doing, because I feel like they're doing what they're going to do. They want power, and once you give them power, they want to exercise that power. The scary part about this whole thing is the people. The people that are going with them on this crazy sort of insane power trip. The folks, the citizens that are yelling at the other citizens who are explaining, you know, we need to reopen the economy, and then they're taking them out and trying to shame them. That's the scary part. The people that are going along with it and actually promoting it. I'm curious your thoughts on that and how we got there so fast.
Well, so fast. I don't think it's so fast. It's paso a paso. The Spanish would say step by step, people. It starts with laziness. Then it increases through the power and energy of fear. And what is that fear? Well, number one, the fear that I might make a bad decision and therefore have to bear the consequences of my actions. It's far better to let someone else make those decisions that know what they're doing, and therefore I can just follow them. But the fundamental problem, people, is none of us have really looked in the mirror anymore. Used to be, I mean, that's what we did. Wasn't much on television, so we got to look at ourselves from time to time. Why does power corrupt? No one asks that question. And it's because we are people, a mixed bag. We love, we're compassionate, generous, caring, gentle people. And at the very same time, we are jealous and suspicious, greedy, and envious. We're a mixed bag. And if you give any human being power, what aspect of that person uses it? Does love use power? No. Love flows or flowers from the human heart. It doesn't need power. It is its own. Does compassion and need power? No. No use for power. What has need for power within that human being? Greed sure as hell needs power, people, doesn't it? Oh, I forgot. Power, I can be as greedy as I want and get whatever I want. Envy, that needs power. Because if you got something I don't, if I got the power, I can either take it away from you or build it myself. No, it's those negative, non-life-supporting aspects of the human entity that use power. Even a person power over another, is love going to use it? No. Doesn't even know how. Doesn't know how. No, no. Anger uses it. And hostility uses it. And greed uses it. So, of course, people go, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Of course. This is why. Now, if we understood this in ourselves, well, we could easily see it in others. But people don't look at themselves anymore.
And I know you're libertarian. I think of myself as a libertarian as well. What do you think the future, might all this give birth to a robust libertarian party and candidate? Might all this sort of chaos, may there be some good that comes out of this chaos?
Well, not according to the lessons that history gives us. I mean, in any democracy, in any partisan political system, multiple parties never increase. They decrease from 5 to 4 to 3 to 2 and eventually to 1. And this is what's happening in America. We're going to end up in 10 years with one political party. I don't care which. Does it matter? Does it matter? The power is going to be equally as cruel, just cruel to different parts of our society, but the cruelty will be there. No, I'm sorry. I wish I could give you hope in my mind that that would be possible, but it's not. Never in the history of political systems have political parties ever increased in number, ever. Now, is America going to be that one rare example? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm a statistician. I mean, there is a one chance in a trillion.
Now, it's interesting because earlier in our conversation, you were talking about manufacturing and American automotive manufacturing sort of hanging on by a thread. And there used to be probably in 1940 or 1925, there were probably 150 American automotive manufacturers.
Yes, absolutely. And some of them were just extraordinary. Cord and
Duesenberg, of course. People don't know Duesenberg is American. Right.
And
a lot of.
Well, it is. Absolutely. And I tell you what, I think I actually had one. The greatest of all, I think, is the Auburn Boattail Racer. I don't know if you've ever seen that car.
Yes. I know that car. And so there were all these manufacturers of automobiles, and they made splendid automobiles. Many of them did, some didn't. But at some point, going along the analogy of political parties, they're just kept getting gobbled up and put under, and now there's two or three, and they're not going to keep – they're not. It's not going the other way. It's not like micro.
No, it will never go the other way because this is – this is capitalism. I'm sorry, it's what a capitalism is. Take any specific industry. See, here's where Karl Marx was totally messed up in the head. No, capitalism is going to collapse. Well, no, and it's not at all. But if you take any industry, of course, that industry will end up being one. I mean, it's already happened many times, and we break them up. AT&T. Well, whatever AT&T used to be, we had to break it up because there was only one phone company. Everybody else died. So, of course, there will be only one car manufacturer, the only one of everything. But, you know, what he missed is the human capability for creativity, development, and innovation. So what happens is while the car companies are just cranking along, someone comes along with an absolutely new concept of cars. I mean, Elon Musk. You go, well, yeah, but it's still a four-wheeled thing. No, it's not. Yeah, you can call it an automobile, but an entirely new concept in terms of transportation. You look at IBM.
Doesn't that give you some hope for the future, the sort of Elon Musks of the world?
Yes, absolutely. It does, but not politically. See, we're talking about a different animal here. Okay, you're the one who bought up cars, and I agree fully. I mean, I bought up cars too, but yeah, I agree fully.
And do you agree that
governments unfortunately don't work that way? Because let's look at the government of the U.S. Let's look at adding machines. Okay,
adding machines.
There were a bunch of companies in the 1940s who had some truly sophisticated adding machines. And cash registers, mechanical devices, you push this and push that, suddenly it adds it up, and the cash drawer opens and tells you what your change is. Then along comes digital computing. Those companies are gone. And in digital computing, we started off with, good God, the mainframes I worked at, three of them, General Electric, Univac, and Xerox, when Siemens was manufacturing computers. They're all over the place. Now, mainframe suppliers, not very many people. And look at the personal telephones. We've got Apple, we've got Samsung, we've got Google with the Pixel, and a few others, right? That's all going to end up being one. I don't know which one. But hopefully there will be new technologies that replace even that utility.
John, do you believe that capitalism is a system, or it's just what shall be if you leave people alone? If you took 1,000 people and put them on an island and just left them there and you came back in 1,000 years, would a form of capitalism be going on that island?
No.
What do you think?
There would be a form of government with one person in charge, and called him, I don't care, king, emperor, god king, just like in all societies ever, because it is always, my friends, government with the power of military, because there is no government without military. You understand this. And why did kings get to be kings? Yeah, they collected around them those that trusted them and were willing to fight for them, and therefore they beat the shit out of anybody who didn't agree. I'm sorry, this is the nature. It's not capitalism. It's totalitarianism. Now, people go, well, totalitarianism is new. Bullshit. What do you think the Tsar of Russia was? What do you think?
So do you think do you think that's where this nation is heading?
Yes, totalitarianism. Good God, it's written on the walls, people. It's written everywhere you look. I mean, did anybody bother, for example, in this massive 24-hour dash of Congress when the coronavirus finally goes, oh, my God, the world's coming to an end, and they pass this $2 trillion bill. They might be able to read that. Did you know that inside that bill are line items like the FBI in an emergency situation? Has the ability to arrest anyone without a court order, without a judge's involvement, and detain them. They use the word indefinitely. You understand that means it could mean for life? Do you understand what fucking happened there, people? We became, at that point, a totalitarian government because all the executive branch has to do is go, it's an emergency, and then direct the FBI to go and arrest all the enemies of the people. Please, God, see it's happening around you now. It's happening.
With you, I'm sure you're not a fan of Trump or Biden, but is it a coin toss or do you care? If you had a magic wand, who would you rather be in power?
I do not. It does not matter. Here's the problem. People think that it matters who the president is. Well, I beg to differ very strongly. I mean, let's look at history. I mean, you, my friend, Adam, look old enough to have lived through at least, what, 6, 7, 8 elections, presidential or more.
I've never counted, but sure, yeah, makes sense.
All right. Let me ask you a question, and everybody who's listening, was a single hair on your head wafted by that explosion of new power? No, nothing in your life changed.
No.
And when you thought it would, like with the Obama administration and Obamacare, everybody in the know knew that ain't going to make any difference because it's going to be dismantled. And it was. Please, people, we live in a system where presidents, I think, have zero power. They have so many strings attached to them, some of them extraordinarily powerful, like the CIA's string.
Well, John, I've always said, I used to say it, which is if you'd locked yourself in a closet and you never found out who was president, whether it was, you know, Mitt Romney or Obama or whomever, Hillary Clinton, and you just went about your life, you wouldn't know. You wouldn't be able
to impossible to know. It would be impossible. So why do I care? I don't. And neither should you people. What you should care about is changing the system. Do you realize, people, in America, federal laws, we have so many federal laws that the average person reading 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, would take 600 years just to read them, let alone comprehend them,
well,
and figure out how to obey them.
Should everyone in America get a gun and a yacht or just a gun? I mean, where are we at with gun ownership? What are your thoughts on that?
Before we get to that, I think everybody knows where where I stand on gun ownership. I own more guns than God. No, before we get to that, the question really is, should we get a yacht? Should we get a gun? No, the question really should be, what should we do? Should we do, people? I don't know if anyone's ever read Ayn Rand's seminal novel, Atlas Shrugged.
Yes.
I don't know if you haven't. Let me just forget what it's about. But Atlas Shrugged, the title's all you need. Atlas is the gentleman who's the world was on his shoulder, supported it. The novel is a metaphor, or actually that's a metaphor for the novel where the people shrugged, meaning, do you understand that the power pyramid, and all power is based on a pyramid, there's simply no way for power to function otherwise, ultimately at the very bottom comes on whose shoulders? Yours and mine. The people paying the taxes, the people with no power, the people that have no choice, and the people who have no hope. However, if we no longer are willing to bear that burden, everything collapses. Everything. And if you doubt me, please look at the violent revolutions. I'm definitely not suggesting that. Absolutely not. But look at the violent ones. I mean, good God Almighty, the Russian Revolution prior to 1917, the Tsar of Russia, the most powerful man in the world with the most powerful army. And all it took was a few days of the people going, we're not taking this anymore. and with pitchforks and plows and lit torches, toppled the most powerful regime in the world. Look at France. I mean, and here's another thing. I mean, if leaders of countries eventually divorce themselves so far from the reality of the people they are supposed to be working for, I don't like to use the word governing, working for, that in the French Revolution, there were riots in the street. And, the queen goes, "Why are my people rioting?" And the advisor says, "Well, Your Majesty, we don't have any bread. They're hungry." So she goes, "Let them eat cake and make this a decree." So they actually went out saying, "You may eat cake." That was the last straw.
Right.
All right. She was beheaded. So please, God, people, your power is the power of indifference, the power of not playing the game anymore. What would happen if every single American just stayed home on election day? If you do not think that would reverberate throughout our government, then you are sadly mistaken, people. We're sadly, I don't have time for one more question. I'm so sorry.
Sorry. Over time. No, that's, I found this.
And I apologize for monopolizing this conversation. I'm 74 years old. Old men tend to do this. My apologies.
I find it riveting. And the reason we had you on is so you could monopolize the conversation. So thank you for your time.
One more question, Adam.
Well, let's ask you about, on a personal note, I know there's some film industry types thinking about telling your life story, and Zac Efron, I think, has signed on and so forth. What can you tell us about the story of your life?
I can tell you whatever about the story of my life, but I can't tell you anything about what the movie's going to say. I'm not part of it, not cooperating with it.
Would you not like that to be done?
I don't care whether I like it or not. It's going to happen. I mean, I'm one of those figures that if shown in the proper light, and I'm sure the proper light will be a villainous character of nefarious nature and the most despicable person on the planet, but that doesn't bother me, at least. First of all, Johnny Depp originally signed on. I was not happy about that. I don't think he could have played me. Fortunately, the poor man unraveled. As we all know from, you know, public images and things,
sure.
I don't know whether he got into drugs or what. And so that didn't pan out. I wanted Morgan Freeman, quite frankly. I just think he did a good job. No, hey, I'm serious about this. See? And so I've been talking to the screenwriters. They're decent people. No one else will talk to me. At one point I actually said, I'm shocked because, you know, they're funny folks, that you would choose Johnny Depp to play a black man. So just because I have had a skin condition since birth that has caused me to appear white does not give you the right to choose a white man. Now, this is how clever these mofos are. They actually sent me a link to a DNA research site. Johnny Depp, 3 generations earlier, has a black great-great-grandfather. So I'm going, no shit, guys. This is how clever these guys. But in any case, but in all seriousness, I'd prefer Morgan Freeman to play me.
I do have one more legitimate question for you that I think uniquely qualified to answer. I've talked to Dr. Drew. First, we were talking about leaving the state of California, but now we're having discussions about leaving the country. Where would you move to? What would be the, what's the, you've been everywhere. You've seen all the jails.
Yes.
Where is the best country? Where would you live if you didn't have the yacht? If you weren't wanted by anyone,
you go? By the way, I'm not on the yacht. The yacht was taken from us. Listen, I can't answer that because it would tell you where I might be, but I'll give you my second best. Okay. Because I will definitely, wherever I am, will be in the number one place, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, it depends on what sort of lifestyle you want. If you'd like utter, absolute freedom in a paradise, I would choose Bali.
Bali.
Bali, absolutely. If that's a little bit too freaky for you, I mean, it is a different place, right? And it's not exactly America. People complain about the violence in Brazil, but my God, you've got violence in America now. I would move to Ipanema in Brazil on the lower Atlantic coast. I mean, I lived there for a year while working for Booz Allen and Hamilton. Yes, I worked for the same company that Edward Snowden did. Maybe that's why we're so much alike. I mean, first of all, a lot more upscale, a lot more facilities.
Bali and Brazil. And last question, should Weinstein have fled?
Yes, I think everybody should have fled that did not. I'm so sorry, but people go, you're a coward, McAfee. Why don't you stand up for what? I mean, I'm going to face charges for refusing to pay taxes, which I have made public for 11 freaking years, knowing I will never see the light of day, simply because the American government wants me to shut up. So, no. People, if you believe that you are being unjustly prosecuted, then escaping, leaving, whatever you want to call it, is your right. I'm sorry. It's simply your right. And I'm sorry. I must go now.
Yes,
my apologies.
I will. I hope we can talk again soon. This has been enlightening.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, Adam, I do have a list of people who I'm willing to talk to again, maybe one out of 25 people. I would be happy to talk to you again. And I'm sorry that I had to cut this short.
Thank you. And I'm flattered that you put me on that short list. And the Twitter.
Okay. And Janice is right here.
Yes. Give her my love. At Official McAfee is the Twitter handle if you'd like to communicate.
That's
with
correct.
John, thank you very much for your time, sir.
And thank you, Adam, for yours. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. All right. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for John McAfee and Ball Brian and Gina Grad saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere across all formats, and the audiobook is rad. Get it now at adamcarolla.com.